Okay, that makes sense. It's hard to keep pretending you're a good guy if... Down! Dalton shouts. He falls onto me, and for a moment I think he's been hit. Then I realize he's pinning me down. There's a shot. Then Storm lets out a yelp of pain. Chapter 57. My dog has been shot. There's a sniper in the trees, and Storm has been shot. I try to scramble up, but Dalton holds me fast, whispering, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Casey." I fight the urge to snarl at him, to get free of him, to get to her. I dig my fingers into the ground to hold myself still, and I listen as hard as I can. After a moment, I hear a labored pant, each breath ending in a whimper. She's been shot. Definitely shot. As I twist toward her, I catch a blur of motion. It's Kenny rolling into the undergrowth, his arms around Storm. "I've got..." Kenny starts. Another shot. Kenny's whole body jerks. Dalton starts to leap up. I tackle and yank him into the undergrowth. "Careful," I say. "We have to be careful." He nods, and we creep on our bellies. We're on the same side of the path as Kenny and Storm, and I can see their shapes ahead. As we move, I hear Jacob whispering, "You're okay. You're okay. Just stay still. Play dead." "Kenny," I whisper, as loudly as I dare. "I've got him," Jacob whispers back. "I have Kenny and Storm. Stay down. Casey, keep Eric down. Stay where you are. Do not move." He's right. Any movement we make is going to draw fire. I reach out for Dalton's hand and clasp it, and we lie there, listening to Kenny's ragged breathing. That's when I see Brady crawling away. Dalton squeezes my hand hard, getting my attention, and then he shakes his head. "Let him go. Don't take the risk of going after him."
"But I have to, don't I? As long as Oliver Brady is out there, people will keep dying."
I look in the direction of the shots. I see nothing. It isn't like the city, where I could scan the buildings and know which is most likely to hold the gunman. This is a forest filled with towering trees, all perfect for a sniper. And as long as this gunman is out there, we are sitting ducks. Eventually, we need to come out, and all the sniper has to do is track us and wait for us to stop moving. So, we can't stop moving. We can't wait for the shooter to figure out where we are. We have a wounded man and dog, and we need to get them someplace safe. I watch Brady sneak off, and I wait for Dalton to relax, convinced I'm giving up on my prey. Then I leap up to a crouch, call, "Get them someplace safe!" and break into a run. Dalton grabs for me. His fingers brush my leg, but I'm gone. I zigzag. One shot fires into a tree several feet away. Another does the same. I'm careful, though, moving up, down, left, right, zipping behind every tree and bush in my path. Behind me, Dalton whispers urgently to Jacob. I can't slow enough to focus on words, but I know Dalton's trusting that I'm okay while he gets the others to safety. Brady hears me coming. He straightens to run faster. A shot hits a tree, clearly intended for me. But when he hears that hit and he sprawls into a home plate slide, I sprint and leap on his back. He bucks. I grab his still-bound wrists and wrench them so hard he howls. "Shut the hell up," I say, slamming his head into the dirt. "I'm doing you a favor. Exactly how long do you think you'd survive out here with your hands tied behind your back?" He glowers over his shoulder. "Yeah, yeah," I whisper. "I'm a stone-cold bitch. I've heard it already. You would do well to note that you're still alive, when it would be a hell of a lot more convenient for me to change that. I will kill you, Oliver, but I need a reason, so don't give me one." I wait until I'm sure the shots have stopped, the sniper trying to find targets again. I'm checking whether we're hidden enough to move when something thumps in the trees to my right. A family of ptarmigan explodes from the bushes, startled by whatever Dalton must have thrown at them. The sniper fires toward the birds. I prod Brady forward with, "Move!" and "Stay down!" He does both. I steer him through the clearest patch of forest floor, where we don't make enough noise to draw the sniper's attention.
The forest has gone silent again. Then there's a shot. One too loud to be the sniper. A tremendous crash. Brady dives. I grab him by the collar and propel him forward. "That's Eric providing cover," I say. This time, he's fired his gun at a dying sapling or dead branch, something that will break and fall, the noise again drawing the sniper's attention. I get Brady behind rocks. We're back in the foothills. There's no conveniently located cave this time, but we wind through the rocks and tree cover until I see Dalton ahead, flagging me. I arrive to see he's found a sheltered spot where he's moved the others. I spot Storm first. Dalton whispers, "She's fine. Bullet grazed a hind leg. She can't run, but she's fine." I crawl to her and rub her neck, and she whines but stays lying down, muzzle on her paws, her gaze on Kenny. I see him, and I stifle a gasp. He's lying on his stomach, his head to the side, eyes closed, not moving. As I scramble over, Jacob says, "He's unconscious, but he's..." Jacob looks at Dalton. "Where did he..." I trail off as I see the answer. Kenny has been shot in the back, the lower back, the bullet passing through near his spine. I forget that there's a sniper out there and a possible killer beside us. That doesn't matter. Kenny has been shot, and this is not a graze or a bullet passing through soft tissue. This is... I drop beside him. I check his vital signs first. They're strong enough to suggest he's only fainted. He isn't in shock, not from internal bleeding or neurogenic shock. The injury is too low on his back for that. I peel up his jacket and shirt as carefully as I can. It's soaked with blood, front and back, but the bleeding is slow. I tend to the injury as best I can while Dalton stands guard. It's quiet out there. Our sniper seems to have a remarkably short attention span. He, or she, is not the trained professional we first thought. With the exception of Kenny, everyone has suffered only minor injuries. Given Kenny, though, the intent does seem lethal. The sniper just doesn't have the skills to pull it off without a perfect target. The wild shots support that theory, as does the fact that it's been easy to draw his fire. This is still someone who knows distance shooting. Knows how to find a good perch and hit a clear target. That's more than I could manage with a rifle, but it's no better than Dalton or Jacob could do with their hunting experience. As for the sniper's intentions, I have no idea. Initially, Brady seemed to be the target, but he hasn't actually hit Brady, nor has he fired only at those standing nearby. By this point, I'm almost wondering if the sniper is a completely separate situation. That we have a settler with a rifle who's decided to kill himself some Rockton residents. Because that's just what we need. We must get help for Kenny. The best plan seems to be leave Jacob and Storm with the remainder of our supplies and a sidearm. Both Dalton and I must take Brady back to Rockton to guard each other from the sniper. That's not even considering the fact that we have settlers hunting for Wallace, who'd be quite happy to vent their outrage on us. And then there's Wallace himself. Could he be the real serial killer? At this point, I'm beyond guessing. If someone lined Brady and Wallace up and told me I had to pick which one to shoot, I might as well make them play rock, paper, scissors to decide who gets the bullet. With no knowledge of the crimes, no evidence to consider, no way of getting any evidence swiftly, it comes down to which man do I believe? And the answer right now is neither. Dalton and I scale the mountain partway to get a better look at our situation. We've climbed about 100 meters up when a voice drifts over from the forest. A voice that has me thinking I'm clearly hallucinating, because it makes no sense in this context. "Is that?" Dalton looks over at me. "Diana?" She stops talking, and a man answers. I hear him speak, and I grin. "Well," I say, "they're out searching." "Oh, shit." Anders and Diana are out searching for us, in the forest, with a sniper and Wallace nearby, and some really pissed off settlers. If we can hear Diana and Will, then others will too. Chapter 58.
I'm going to go to them, I say. Can you cover me?
Dalton nods. I slide down the mountainside as Dalton positions himself, gun ready. I reach the bottom and scamper from one point of cover to the next. I hear Anders again, but his voice is muffled now that I'm on ground level, and I can tell he's farther away than I thought. I turn and see Dalton shielding his eyes, watching me. I pantomime that they're at least a kilometer away, and he motions that he'll stand guard for as long as he can see me. I'm zipping past the others, quietly calling to Jacob that I hear Anders when Brady lurches out.
I am not staying out here, Brady says. If you're on the move, so am I.
I want to put my damn gun to his head. I might, too, if I could spare the time to slow down, and the time to chew him out, and the risk of being overheard by our sniper. I see Dalton watching from above. He gives a dismissive gesture, one I'd love to interpret as, just shoot the son of a bitch. But I know better.
Keep up, I say. You want to try escaping again? That sniper isn't the only one in this forest with a gun. You don't need to keep reminding me, he grumbles as he jogs over.
When I glance back to Dalton, he puts a finger gun to his head and shakes his head, and I have to smile at that. By this point, we don't really give a shit if Brady is innocent. Killing him on principle seems like a fine idea. He catches up and stays behind me. I'd rather he was in front, where I can watch him, but that won't help me find Anders and Diana quickly. I can no longer hear them. I'm moving at a slow jog, and Brady has the sense to do the same, making minimal noise. Shortly after I start, I think I hear something, but it quickly goes quiet. I'm long out of Dalton's line of sight, unable to see more than the mountaintop over the trees. I'm mentally trying to pinpoint where the sound might have come from when I hear Diana, her voice harsh as she argues with Anders. I'm not sure whether to breathe a sigh of relief that I hear her, or hiss in exasperation at her loudly bickering with him. Diana and Anders had a one-night stand after she arrived. And then I showed up, and to her, it seemed that he suddenly turned his attentions my way. Not entirely true. Their affair had been a drunken one-nighter, which he regretted, realizing he might have taken advantage of her at a vulnerable time. But to have him hanging out with me a day after sharing her bed? Humiliating. And she hasn't forgiven him. I don't quite blame her. It's an awkward situation all around. Now I'm just wishing they hadn't had the harebrained idea to team up and come find me. Why Diana? Even at our closest, I'd never have chosen her as a search team partner.
I am not, she begins.
Anders answers, his voice pitched higher than normal, clearly feeling the strain of this pairing. I can't make out what he's saying, but it must be some variation on,
hell yeah, you will die.
Because she comes back with,
absolutely not, you crazy!
A hiss of pain cuts her short, and I stumble to a halt.
Will?
The question lasts only a split second. I know Will Anders, and it doesn't matter if he isn't really Will Anders. If he's a soldier named Calvin James who shot his CO in cold blood. Anders would be the first person to call himself a killer, a monster. But even when I once suspected him of brutally murdering four residents, I'd struggled with my own conclusion. As naive as it sounded, I could not believe he'd done it. And he hadn't. I know Will Anders. I also know Calvin James. I know exactly what happened, even if he doesn't understand it himself. Once I stood in front of a man I hated, pointed a gun at him, and pulled the trigger. I snapped. Anders did the same. Spurred on by tragedy and rage and misprescribed medication. When I hear Diana's words and that hiss of pain, I know that the other speaker is not Anders.
Casey!
Diana calls, and her companion doesn't stop her.
Casey? If you're out there and you can hear me?
She pauses, as if expecting to be interrupted.
Run! Run like hell!
A smack cuts her short. Whoever has her hostage told her to call to me.
This just isn't the message she wanted imparted.
Casey!
She shouts.
It's Brady's father! He's knocked out, Will!
Another thwack. Hand against flesh. Then I hear Wallace talking to Diana, his voice clearer now as he tells her to stop it. He hasn't hurt Anders. Hasn't hurt her. Stop being so melodramatic.
And you think I'm fucked up, Brady mutters behind me. He's holding your friend hostage, smacking her around and telling her she's overreacting.
So he is dangerous, I say. Brady stares at me.
Have you been listening to anything I said? He's killed at least 5 people, tortured them, watched them die. Oh, but he seems like such a nice guy.
He jabs a finger in the direction the voices came from.
Does that seem like a nice guy? Of course he's fucking dangerous. He's going to kill your friend and...
Just checking, I say as I kick out his knee. Brady drops, and I grab his arm with one hand, wrenching them up again as I put my gun at his head and plant my foot on his back.
Wallace! I shout. It's Casey!
What the fuck are you... Brady begins. You just confirmed he's dangerous, which means he'll kill Diana and Will if he doesn't get what he wants. I'm going to guess what he wants is you.
Brady goes wild, struggling and snarling. I keep wrenching his arm and warning him to stop. There's a crack as his wrist breaks. He howls in pain.
You bitch! You...
Shh, I say. I can't hear your daddy. I push Brady's face into the dirt and shout,
Wallace!
Yes,
the reply comes slow, tentative.
You've got something I want, I say. I'm gonna guess I have something you want, too.
If it's that sadistic bastard my wife whelped, you would be correct, detective.
Then bring Diana and follow the sound of my voice.
I keep Brady pinned, muffling his rage as I scan the treetops, all too aware of the chance we're taking with this confrontation. The chance that our voices will tell our sniper friend exactly where to find us. Wallace eventually appears, Diana in the lead, a knife at her back.
He ambushed us,
she says.
Knocked out Will.
I mouth to ask if there are others. Anders and Diana can't be the only searchers. But her gaze sweeps over the forest in a desperate look that tells me, yes, there are others, but they aren't close enough to come running.
I just want what I came for, Wallace says. I haven't killed anyone. I've only done what I had to. I need you to give me Oliver.
But that was the deal, wasn't it? I say. So why the sudden need to force my hand, Gregory? To start hurting my people?
I know you have doubts, Casey. I've seen it in your face. In Sheriff Dalton's. You've spoken to Oliver, and whatever he has said, it's made you wonder if you've been misled. I don't blame you, which is why I'm doing my best not to hurt your people. But I can't take the chance that you won't use lethal force to stop Oliver if he escapes. The very fact he's still alive tells me I'm right. You'll let him run, and others will die.
You son of a...
Brady begins. I push the gun against the back of Brady's neck. Oliver here is telling a new story, I say. One that says you're the monster, the serial killer.
What?
Wallace's eyes round.
My God, Ollie, you are desperate. You're actually accusing me. I caught you,
Brady snarls.
With that boy.
I followed you to where you were keeping him, and I saw what you'd done. What you were doing. You murdered him right in front of me. Slit his throat while he begged me to save him.
You know, Ollie, I recognize that story. It sounds very familiar. Maybe because it did happen, only I was the one following you. I was the one who saw that poor kid.
Wallace's voice rises.
And I was the one begging. Begging you to let him go as he sobbed, gagged and bound, covered in blood and filth. A boy. A teenage boy. You tortured him. Murdered him. I don't even want to know what else you've done to him.
Brady struggles to get up from under me.
You bastard! You sick, sick bastard!
Do you think I've forgotten what you did to me when I was his age? I kept my mouth shut because you said you'd kill my mother if I told her. Maybe I should have let you if it meant stopping you before anyone else died.
Wallace looks at me. He will say anything to get out of this, Casey.
So will you,
Brady spat. Wallace keeps his gaze on me. I know you're angry at me for threatening your friends, but I have done the minimum damage possible. Same as with that woman in the village. I just want to get Oliver out of here before he kills more people. However angry you are right now, Casey, the difference in our behavior should speak for itself. Oliver has murdered multiple people up here. I've knocked out two. I've threatened this woman, and yes, I've struck her in anger. Ask her if I've done more. Check to see if she suffered even a bruise.
Diana gives a reluctant shake of her head. We have no actual proof Oliver killed anyone except Brent, I say. And even Brent says the bullet was fired accidentally, during a fight. Brady stops struggling. I won't know about Val until I retrieve her body, I say. I saw no signs of trauma that couldn't have been inflicted by a fall. As for the settler massacre, I believe someone else was responsible.
Some other random killer roaming the woods, Wallace says. I'm sorry, Detective. I realize Oliver is an attractive young man, and he can be charming.
Stop right there, I say. Brady gives a harsh laugh.
Yeah, no, Greg. Don't even try that. She hates my fucking guts, whether I'm guilty or not. The only reason she isn't shooting me is that she's actually a damn fine cop. One who gives a shit about you, too, I say. Enough!
I don't want patronizing bullshit from him or bootlicking flattery from you. She's right, Diana says. I've known Casey half my life. Don't insult her. Don't flatter her. She'll see through that crap and stomp you both like bugs.
Just give me my stepson, Wallace says. That's all you need to do. Hand him to me and I will lead you to your deputy and we'll all walk back to town. It's not as if I can hijack the plane and fly out on my own.
He can do exactly that, Brady says. He has a fleet of small planes and he insists on flying them himself. Like he insists on doing everything himself, including murder.
Wallace sighs. And here is the problem, Casey. Lies. His endless lies. I don't know how to fly. I don't own any planes. If I did, why would Phil have brought me?
Oliver is spouting nonsense. He'll say whatever it takes to make you doubt me.
And so they go, accusing one another and protesting their innocence, leaving me feeling like the therapist for the most dysfunctional family ever. Except I'm not their therapist. I am their judge, jury, and yes, executioner. I can end this now. Decide who is lying and shoot him. I have Brady pinned under me, and Wallace is barely even bothering to hold the knife on Diana, too caught up in defending himself against his stepson's accusations. All I have to do is decide who is telling the truth, who is the real killer. Which is impossible, when I have nothing to go on but their say-so. Maybe, after all my years as a detective, my gut should tell me which one is guilty. But right now, it wants me to shoot both of them. It says they're both full of shit, and I don't think it's wrong. Neither is being completely honest. But one is a serial killer, and the other is just a garden-variety dangerous son of a bitch. One deserves death. One does not. And I have no idea which is which. I catch Diana's eye. She's looking straight at me, tuning out father and son as she waits for me to resolve this, like I always do. Casey to the rescue. Just trust Casey. See how well that worked out for Val and Kenny? I failed them. I will not fail Diana. I could signal to her that she can jump aside and get free of Wallace, but that's a risk. No more risks. No more being a homicide cop. I need to channel Dalton here. I am the guardian of those under my protection, and they are all that matters.
He's yours,
I say to Wallace. Brady screeches.
What?
You'll escort him back to town, I say, and I don't really give a damn what happens then. Which is a lie. I have every intention of getting to the bottom of this. I just can't do it out here, with them raging at each other, drawing the attention of everyone around. And not while Anders lies unconscious and Kenny is in desperate need of medical attention. Just let me get them to town and I'll figure out my next move there. I haul Brady to his feet. When he resists, I squeeze his broken wrist. He howls. And a bullet hits the tree right beside Wallace's head. Wallace spins, but he doesn't dive for cover. He grabs Diana, yanking her in front of him. When she tries to pull away, the knife flashes and blood sprays, and I forget Brady. I run for Diana. Wallace holds her like a human shield. I knock her in the side, shoving her away. Wallace grabs my upper arm and yanks me into Diana's place. When I see the look on his face, I know what he is. I finally know. I swing my gun up. The idiot has forgotten I have it. He slashes with the knife, the blade aiming for my face. I wrench from his grasp. On the ground, I say, gun barrel pressing up under his chin. Get on the goddamn ground or... You'll shoot, Wallace says. You haven't yet, Casey. Because I hadn't figured out which of you bastards is guilty. Now I have. I push the gun barrel in harder. Do you notice which one I let escape? And which is at the end of my gun? You're wrong. You... His whole body convulses so fast, I'm sure it's a trick. I'm about to pull the trigger when I see Diana beside him, holding the knife, blood dripping from the blade. Wallace's mouth works. Then he topples. I kick Wallace as he falls, and then I'm on him. He lies face down on the ground, my gun to his head, blood gushes from his side.
I stabbed him,
Diana says, and she's clutching the weapon in both hands.
I took the knife and I stabbed him. He...
Get down, I say. I look around, but there have been no more shots. Brady is gone, and the sniper has stopped shooting. That is no coincidence. It's your shooter, isn't it? I say to Wallace. You put someone out here to kill him. You paid the council to let you bring in an assassin. Wallace gives a ragged chuckle.
You have seen too many movies, my dear. And Oliver was wrong. You're a lousy detective. You picked the wrong...
No, I did not. The minute that gun fired, you grabbed Diana to shield you. You stabbed! I look over sharply to see she's got her jacket off and is wrapping it around her arm.
He sliced me good, she says. You're going to need to give me a few stitches. I'm fine, though. Not that he gave a damn.
She's right. I saw Wallace's face when he pulled her to shield him. When he stabbed her, when he tried to stab me. Backed into a corner, we cannot conceal our true selves. I saw his, and I still don't know exactly what we're dealing with here, but Gregory Wallace is not an innocent man. I bind and gag him. Then I leave him where he lies, while Diana takes me to Anders. Chapter 59. When we arrive, Anders is conscious and struggling to get free from an old hemp rope tying him to a tree. His wrists are bloodied, and as much as I want to carefully tend to his injuries and Diana's, Kenny's situation is a much graver concern. Our path takes us past Wallace. Diana offers to stay with him. I don't actually give a damn if anyone stays. He's not escaping those ties, and if the cougar finds him and thinks he's a fine dinner, I'm okay with that. But I leave Diana behind, armed with a knife and a whistle. When we set out again, Anders says,
Rough day?
I'm not sure whether to laugh or cry. I think I do a little of both, and he puts his arm around my shoulders as we walk.
Kenny was alive and stable when you left him, he says after I explain. I'm not gonna lie and say he'll be fine, but he was alive and he was stable. Also, he glances over. What happened to him wasn't your fault.
He only came out here to clear his name.
No, he comes out here all the time as a member of the militia. Odds are just as good that he could have been shot by this psycho sniper while just doing his job. You don't really feel guilty about him being out here. You feel guilty for thinking he was Brady's accomplice. I nod. Lesson one in Rockton, he says. Trust no one. Except Eric. Well, trust him to not be a killer or a killer's accomplice. I know he has secrets, but I'm sure you already know those. I glance over. He shrugs. I can tell, and I'm never gonna push. That's his business. But I know his secret isn't our secret. That we've killed people. If you and I have that in our background, though, anyone could. Even Kenny. He was the most likely suspect for Brady's accomplice. So stop beating yourself up. I'll do whatever I can for him. Hopefully he'll be fine. We walk a few more steps, and then he says, "There's more, isn't there?" "Something else happened out there." "The sniper shot someone Eric knew. A hostile we..." I swallow. "A hostile might have helped. It was a misunderstanding. She ran into the forest. And there were others. Hostiles. Eric had to shoot them, and he tried to just wound them, and... things got worse." "Shit." He looks over. "And you?" I shrug. "Casey. I shot one. Had to. Me or him. You know how..." I stop myself. There's a lightness in my voice. Forced, casual, sardonic. "You know how it is. You were a soldier." Which is not anything he needs to be reminded of. "I do know," he says, brushing his shoulder against mine. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean..." He cuts me off with a quick embrace as we walk. "I do know. And it sucks every last goddamn time. I'm worried about Eric." "I know you are." "I'm also worried I may have..." I inhale. "He may have seen a side of me. I'd rather he didn't." "You mean the side that just told Wallace he's a piece of shit who deserves to be carved up and fed to the ravens?"
Possibly. Anders laughs.
"If you think Eric would be the least bit surprised by that, you are underestimating the man. You might try to hide that part, but you do a lousy job of it. Sorry, Wallace is alive and you're doing everything you can to keep him that way until he can face his crimes. That's enough."
I look at him. "Is it too much? If only I'd killed Brady back in Rockton."
"Yeah, don't even go there. You aren't that person. If we'd killed him then, yes, people would still be alive, but we had no way of knowing that. And we were right to suspect the council's story, considering Brady turned out to be innocent."
"Did he?" Anders frowns at me.
"You still have questions?"
"Yes. Yes, I do."
We're halfway to the spot where I left Kenny with Dalton and Jacob, when we hear the pound of feet on a nearby path.
"Brady," I say.
"That's..." When I trail off, Anders reaches into his pack and hands me his whistle.
"Go on."
"No, I should..."
"You've done what you can for Kenny. I'm reasonably sure even I can't do any more until we get him back to Rockton. That's my real role here. The muscle to help make that happen. If I need a nurse, Eric does a fine job. You go get Brady."
"It might not be him."
"It is. Go."
I take off. As I jog along the path, I think. So many questions. And maybe, just maybe, an answer. But for now, I will only say that I have questions. It seemed logical that the sniper works for Wallace. It might also seem logical that the sniper would stop shooting when Brady, his target, fled. But that does not explain the fact that the first bullet was aimed at Wallace. That Wallace instinctively grabbed for a human shield. Would you do that if you'd hired the man firing the gun? Of course not. And if you did hire that man, and he saw you being taken captive, would he not turn his rifle on those attacking you? You can't collect payment if your client is dead. When Diana and I went to free Anders, we left Wallace bound and gagged, and the sniper never returned to check on him, never returned to free him. The sniper is not Wallace's man. Yet Wallace is guilty. I saw that mask slide from Gregory Wallace's face. I could say it was just the mask of civility falling away, like the hostiles in this forest, stripped of what passes for humanity when they are forced to fight for their lives. That is bullshit. Strip away my mask of civility and you get someone who would shoot a man who left her to be beaten to death, and then blamed her for it. Someone who would have shot Wallace or Brady, not caring which was innocent, if it saved a friend. What I saw in Wallace was more than my brand of darkness. It was evil. When faced with danger, he pulled an innocent bystander into the path of the bullet. Does that mean Wallace has done what Brady claims? He could have. For now, I'll only say that. He is entirely capable of it. As for Brady, a theory. That's what I have. Now I need the man himself. Chapter 60. It's easy enough to sneak up on Brady. He hasn't transformed into a master woodsman. The problem has always been simply getting close enough to find him in this endless wilderness. Once I am, I can hear him, stop to catch his breath. Those gasps cover my approach. Then I grab his broken wrist, still bound by my handcuff tie. He lets out a shriek, half pain, half surprise. When he sees me, he deflates. "Oh, come on, detective," he says. "I'm starting to feel like that guy in Les Mis, chased by the cop who just won't give up, even when he knows the poor guy is innocent." "Javert didn't know anything of the sort," I say, "and neither do I." "Seriously?" He slumps, shaking his head, like I'm a patrol officer who pulled him over for speeding. Just a pain-in-the-ass cop, wasting the taxpayers' money trying to pin some silly little misdemeanor on him. "I'm going to ask you again," I say. "How far do you think you'll get with your hands tied behind your back?" "Does it matter?" "Sure it does." I walk in front of him, my gun lowered. "A few years ago, I went to a party where they played a game called Would You Rather. It's supposed to be two equally shitty choices. Except the host didn't quite get the point and kept giving choices where there really was no choice at all. Like, would you rather take a bullet to the head or die of slow starvation in the forest? Whatever fate you'd suffer out here is much worse than what your stepfather would do to you."
Did you miss the part where he's a fucking psychopath? He didn't shoot those people in the head. He tortured them.
Yes, I'm sure being tied up and beaten wasn't...
Tied up and beaten? Is that your idea of torture? He cut them. He burned them. He pulled out their fingernails. Their teeth. He did the kind of things you see in movies when they're trying to get spies to talk. Only he didn't want these people to talk. He wanted them to scream, to cry, to beg... to break.
You got a good look, then, at that boy you caught him with. A heartbeat's pause before he plows on with,
"Yes. Yes, I did, detective."
"And he molested you as a child." A glimmer of relief as I move on, and he nods.
"Yes."
"Tell me about that."
"What the hell is this, a therapy couch?"
"No, it's an interrogation room." "You have accused your stepfather of molesting you. I've dealt with victims of that. I've had to interview them, lead them through it, and it was a horrible part of my job, but it was necessary to properly prosecute the offenders. So I know the stories. I know all the reactions a victim gives. Go on, Oliver. Convince me."
He starts to rage that he won't give me the satisfaction, that he won't play this bullshit game. Rage, deflect, rant. "I'm lying, of course. I have dealt with those victims. I have interviewed them. But there is no way in hell that I can tell a real accusation from a false one just by speaking to the accuser. Every response is different. I just want Brady to believe I can do it." He does, and so he says not one word about the abuse. He just rages at me until he finishes with, "You want me to talk about that? Put me in front of a real professional."
"With a lie detector?"
"Fuck you. My stepfather is a sadistic bastard, and whatever he did to me pales in comparison to what he did to his other victims.
I ease back. I don't know. One could argue otherwise. I'm sure a defense attorney would. Gregory may not have molested you, but turning you into a killer? That's some seriously bad parenting.
What? No, he's the killer. He's the one-
Yes, I suspect he is. You both are. Partners in crime who turned on each other. How did it happen, Oliver? Not how he lured you into it. You're right, that's a story for a therapist, and I don't really care. I'm curious about the schism. The break. How did it come to this? Former partners, each desperately trying to pin the crimes on the other. It takes 3 long seconds for him to say,
"What the hell are you talking about?"
And with that, I know I've hit on the truth. The reason I couldn't pick a side. The solution that makes so much more sense than all the ones they've spouted. Not a man trying to steal his stepson's inheritance. Not one trying to shield his wife from her son's horrible crimes. Not a young man who stumbled over his stepfather's horrible crimes. Shared crimes. Shared blame. Equally shared? I don't give a damn. I've taken Wallace into custody, I say. I'm doing the same with you. Eric will fly you both back down south and tie you up in a hotel room and place an anonymous call to the police.
Sure, do that,
Brady says. And we'll tell them all about you and your town. Do you think you haven't given us enough information to pass on to the authorities?
I know your name, Detective Casey Butler. I know his, Sheriff Eric Dalton. I know the names of a half dozen people in your town. I know I'm in Alaska. I've been here before, and I recognize the terrain. They will track you down, and...
He trails off, and I smile. Can't even finish that threat, can you? I say. They'll do what? We've given them 2 serial killers. You tell them that you were turned in by some secret prison camp in Alaska? Why would they care? And why would you presume they don't already know about us? He blinks at me. Turn around, I say, and start walking.
Not so fast, Casey, a voice says behind me.
It's a familiar voice, but on hearing it, my heart skips. Not possible. That is not. I turn and I see Dalton. But it wasn't his voice I heard. It was a woman's. Then I see Dalton's hands on his head as he's prodded down the path by a woman.
Hello, Casey, Val says. You look surprised to see me.
I saw your...
I don't finish. I will sound like a fool if I do, and I already feel the sting of my mistake. But how was it a mistake? I saw the bloat of her corpse. I know she was not alive.
Sharon,
Dalton mouths, and with that, I understand.
Sharon, one of our winter dead, the woman who died of a heart attack last week, whom we'd been burying when Brady arrived.
Sharon was not a perfect doppelganger for Val. She was older, with longer hair, heavier, shorter. But none of that mattered for a water-bloated corpse floating face down in the water. Cut the gray streaked hair to Val's length, dress her in Val's clothing, put her corpse in the water and send it downstream, and even if we had managed to pull it out, between the rot and the bloat, it would have been hard to say it wasn't Val. Peter Sanders had pulled that same trick with Nicole. Found a dead hostel or settler and put her in Nicole's clothing and damaged the body enough that Dalton naturally concluded he'd found Nicole. Val knew we didn't have the equipment to test DNA, and that told her the trick might work again.
Eric stopped to help me, Val says. He couldn't resist, even when he considers me dead weight on your precious town. All I had to do was lie in his path, and he holstered his gun and raced over to help.
And that's weakness to you, isn't it? I say. That he came to your aid, no questions asked, despite all the shit you've put him through?
Put him through?
I'm the one who's gone through hell in that godforsaken town. Condemned to coexist with people who lack the IQ to carry on a proper conversation with me. Yet they all tried. Even you, Casey. Especially you. You had to try to help a poor fellow female, trapped in her home, cowering like a mouse. I wasn't cowering, you idiot. I was waiting. You said once that the council constructed a prison for me, made me too afraid to leave my house. No, I constructed it. It was my refuge, and you couldn't leave me well enough alone.
Yeah, Dalton says. We're all assholes for giving a shit.
My look warns him not to antagonize her. I'm all too aware of that gun at his back.
You should have left me alone, Casey, she says.
But you couldn't. You had to dig and poke and prod, destroy what little sanctuary I had, rob me of what few allies I had.
Allies? I say. You mean the council? Because I'd prove they set you up to be raped.
I was not raped. Her voice shakes along with the gun, and I give myself the same warning I gave Dalton. Stop. Just stop. She continues. I escaped. If you don't believe that's possible, it's because you didn't escape your attackers, Casey. You let them beat you. Let them almost kill you. Almost certainly let them rape you. You could not get away. So you cannot conceive of the possibility that another, stronger, smarter woman might have. Okay, I say, and it's a calm, even response. But she keeps shaking, wanting to fight, to defend herself, and I change the subject fast.
So you helped Oliver here. You ingratiated yourself with him while pretending you were spying for us.
Then you bought it, she smiles. You couldn't help yourself. Your pet project was showing signs of improvement. Joining the community, making herself useful. I manipulated you into giving me access to him, and you jumped at the chance.
You brought supplies, I say. Food, weapons. That's why Oliver didn't bother retrieving my gun after he shot Brent. And you sent him to Brent. You knew Brent could lead you both to Jacob.
She says nothing. It doesn't matter. Not now. Focus on the facts, on how this fills in the holes. Brady attacked Brent because Val said Brent could get them a better hostage. Jacob, who could also guide them out of the wilderness. And the companion Jacob saw with Brady? Val. From a distance, Jacob mistook her for a man. She brought those protein bars they shared, old stock she had access to. Brady had been so confident, he'd outright lied about it, didn't even bother making up a story.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Detective.
Dalton jerks his chin toward Val, and it takes a moment to see what he's gesturing at. The rifle barrel poking over Val's collarbone, a gun slung at her back.
You're the sniper, I say.
Yes, I know my way around a gun too, Casey, she says. Did you presume I was too weak and timid? I told you I used to stay on my grandparents' farm. They had guns. I insisted on learning. I'm good at it. My aptitude for mathematics comes in handy with distance shooting. Of course, my grandparents didn't think it was a proper sport for a girl, so while they humored me as a child, I had to shoot in secret when I got older. Which was useful, as it turns out. Do you recall those boys who taunted me? Chased me, tried to assault me. One died the month before he graduated from high school, shot by a stray bullet in the forest. A careless hunter, it seems.
And you shot Kenny, I say, who was no threat to you, was never anything but respectful.
Respectful? He was a toad, always trying to talk to me, ask what he could do for me. I know what he wanted to do for me.
So you shot him? He was in the path of my actual target.
Casey, Dalton says when I don't respond. You wanted to kill Casey. You felt threatened.
Threatened? By this child? Val laughs. No,
Sheriff. I only wanted her out of the way. She stood between me and the one thing that really can get us out of this godforsaken wilderness. Him, I say. Eric. Shooting him on our walk was accidental. He just wanted it to look as if someone was trying to assassinate Oliver. When Oliver couldn't get Brent to take him to Jacob, you decided Eric would do. He can guide you out, keep you alive. You'd kill him and force him to help you escape. Now I don't need to kill you, so I won't. Proving I'm not threatened by you, Casey. I'll just borrow your lover for a week. If he gets us where we want to go, I'll set him free. And I'm supposed to trust you. He's no threat to us once we escape, so why would we kill him? Because you can. Because Oliver here is a sadistic. It was Greg, Brady snarls. He made me do it. He forced me to help him, and he said if I ever told anyone, he'd kill me. Which would be hard for him to do from a prison cell. He might have groomed you, Oliver, but that's only because he saw you for what you are. As much a narcissistic, sociopathic sadist as he is. And you, Val? I turned to her. You felt like a prisoner in Rockton because you were. You weren't there by choice. Which means that farm boy isn't the only person you've killed. That's the thing about pulling a trigger. Either you're horrified and suffer a lifetime of guilt, or you realize it wasn't so bad after all. You tried to kill Kenny because he literally stood in your way. You tried to do the same to me because I figuratively blocked your path. You're no different than this psycho, which means I can't trust you to let Eric go once he guides you out. I don't think you have a choice here, Casey. Drop to your knees with your head down, or I'll put a bullet. I shoot her between the eyes. I don't think about it. I cannot second guess. I have my gun in my hand, and I have exactly one chance here, while she's talking, while she's convinced she's won. I swing my gun up, and I fire. I see her eyes. There is a moment there, a terrible moment, between her seeing the gunfire and death. A moment when she knows what has happened. A moment of horror that I will not forget. Val drops to the ground. Holy shit! Brady says. Holy! I point the gun at him, and he stops. I'm waiting for Dalton to tell me, no, don't shoot Brady. But he says nothing. Does nothing. I glance back, and his face is ashen. He isn't in shock, though. He says nothing because he knows he doesn't need to. I had to shoot Val, and I don't have to shoot Brady. Start walking, I say to Brady. Hell no! I am not! He stops talking. I think that means he's realized there's no point arguing. Then I see the blood blossoming on his chest. His mouth works. He falls to his knees, and he topples face first to the ground. I spin, gun raised. That shot did not come from me. It did not come from Dalton. I didn't hear a gunfire, meaning it came from one with a suppressor. We don't have suppressors in Rockton. Both of us turn, our guns raised, scanning the empty forest. Then I see a flash of motion, a killer in flight. I tear off. Dalton passes me, but the gap is too wide. The killer dressed in camouflage, little more than a blur through the trees. I let myself slow, gait smoothing as I squint at the shooter. A slight figure, narrow shoulders, hips just as wide. It's a woman. She's fast and she's agile and she knows how to move in the forest, racing down the path, leaping over obstacles, outrunning Dalton. He shoots. The sound of that shot surprises me. It's wild though. Intentionally wild, no matter what has happened. He is not aiming to bring down someone who shot a serial killer. He's just trying to get her attention. He does, and she glances over her shoulder, and I catch a flash of pale skin and light hair, and a face I recognize. Even from this distance, I recognize it. She doesn't slow, though, and in trying to surprise her, Dalton got a shock himself, one that has him stumbling. Then she's around the corner, too far ahead to ever catch. After a pause, He heads back to me as I cover him. I will fire. If she turns and I see her gun trained on Dalton, I will shoot her. She doesn't turn. Dalton breaks into a jog and says,
"Did you see?"
"I did."
"That was..."
"Petra." We leave Val's and Brady's bodies behind. We cover them and mark the spot. Then we set out to Rockton. "I killed Val," I say.
"You did what I couldn't. Last winter, with Peter."
He's looking straight ahead as we walk.
"I froze up,"
he says.
"All I could see was Peter holding a knife on you, and I panicked. I should have shot him."
"No, you couldn't. If you had killed him, we'd have lost Nicole." A few steps before he says, his voice low,
"I didn't care. Not at that moment. I just froze."
And I just reacted. I panicked, with another result. He shakes his head.
"You thought it through. Made a choice. I still regret not shooting Peter. I go over it and over it in my head. What if I lost you because I froze up? And now you'll second-guess making the opposite choice."
More quiet walking. Then he says,
"We're both gonna suffer. Wonder if we made the wrong decision. But I guess that's better than the alternative."
"Which is?"
"Not giving a shit."
He looks back in the direction of the bodies.
"Being like them."
Chapter 61. We're nearing town when we meet Anders, pacing the path. He looks behind us and says,
"You didn't find Brady?"
"We did," I say. "Someone didn't want us bringing him back alive." Anders swears.
"The sniper?"
I make a noise he can interpret as assent for now. "How's Kenny?" I say, dreading the answer.
"Stable. That's all I can tell you. We got him back, and now we're getting the swelling down so Matthias and I can see the bullet. Unfortunately, that's not our biggest problem right now. Phil is ready to put Wallace on a plane and fly him out of here. I was giving you guys another 60 seconds before I stopped him at gunpoint."
We break into a jog, and I say, "Is Phil in on it? Or is this the council?"
"No idea. I told Phil what Wallace did, told him you think he's the killer, not Brady. It seemed like he believed me. Then he starts packing. I say, 'Hell no, not until you guys get back.' He reminds me that, in Val's absence, he's in charge. I argued, but he ignored me, acted like the walls were talking, and then went to check the plane."
"Where is he now?"
"He ordered me to bring Wallace to the hangar. I told him to go fuck himself and came to see if you guys were nearby."
We head straight for the hangar. Anders tells us Jacob and Storm are fine. He managed to persuade Jacob to sneak into my old place through the back door, and he's recovering there. We're nearing the hangar when we hear the plane start.
"Shit,"
Anders says. We're about 20 meters away when Phil appears, doing a last visual check of the runway.
"I'm taking the prisoner, Sheriff,"
he calls when he sees us.
"The hell you are,"
Dalton says.
"Actually, yes, I am. And while I know you need to bluster in front of Will and Casey, let's skip that part. Your protest is duly noted, but it doesn't change the fact that you are not in charge here. I can assure you Mr. Wallace will be properly dealt with."
"We have a patient in urgent need," I begin.
"And you have Dr. Atlier, plus the sheriff's plane should the council decide to extract Kenny."
"I want to talk to Wallace," I say. "I have questions that require answers."
"No, Casey. You have questions you would like answered, and you wish to stall me while you figure out how to stop me."
"I want to figure out how you can take him safely," I say. "He's a dangerous psychopath."
"Yes, yes, I know,"
Phil says, as if I'm telling him Wallace might prove an annoying seatmate. Dalton's gaze swings toward the hangar. Then he starts to run. Phil holds his ground, saying,
"If you physically try to stop me, Eric..."
Dalton swerves around the hangar instead, heading for the rear door. I follow, and Phil calls,
"Whatever you two have in mind, it is a waste of time. If you attempt to stop me, there will be consequences. I would suggest, Casey, that you..."
I don't catch the rest. drowned out by the sound of the plane. The back door to the hangar stands open. Dalton circles into the trees to sneak up on the other side. Anders has joined us, and he gets into the trees, angled where he can cover me. I swing through the door.